This is Fritz Norsted speaking. I've been asked to record a few memories, impressions, reactions to that brief year which Gertrude and I had at Holden Village. Just now we're sitting here in Leavenworth, to which place we came after leaving the village in May of 1978 upon the arrival of John Schramm. I'm retired. In many ways, Holden located this spot for us. We used to travel through Leavenworth quite often when we were going out of the village and into Seattle, and were charmed by the location. I think I would have to say not quite so much by the town as by the beautiful setting with the river and the hills around it. But the town itself, of course, is a very charming place. Then it was Karen Reike and John Reike who located a spot that they thought we might be interested in when they knew that we were looking for some place to settle down and to spend the remaining years of our lives. So very much Holden located the spot, but Holden also was very important in building the house in which we live. Reid Carlson was our chief carpenter and sort of the crew boss also. John Reike did the plumbing. Then we were extremely fortunate that Merrill Cagle volunteered to do all of the wiring of the house for us. And in this, he was assisted by Greg Stieber, who was also something of an electrician. Tim Martin, who was built for heavy work and also had the brain to go with it, did a great deal of work on this house for the whole summer that we were in our primary building. Merrill and Greg and Tim and many others worked simply volunteering to help us. We'll always be very grateful for that. I suppose we could also say that Holden sort of occupied the house. In the first year we were here, much of which was spent up at John Schramm's house in the town itself. They were kind enough to let us live in that while we were building this. But during the time that we were living at John Schramm's, and when we moved in here for the first one-year period that we were out of the village, we counted up one time, and just of those we could remember, there were 250 visitors in that first year, visitors from Holden who came, most of them spending overnight sleeping on the decks outside and inside. And it was a delightful experience. I'm not sure that I would have wanted to have had that continue for the rest of our lives, but it was sure a joy and a good way to let us down after the intense excitement of living in the village for that 1 year period. So now we're living at the end of a lane, and if you want to make anything of that, go ahead. I think we sort of did, even deliberately, when we chose a place that was off the beaten paths and down a lane for a somewhat quieter kind of an existence, away from the hurry and the bustle that we had been used to for all the years of our lives up to this time. If you come down our lane and you go 5 feet too far, you find yourself in our living room. The road ends here. Our first experience at the village at all, directly, was in 1963, when we spent 5 weeks in the village. Prior to that, I had had some awareness that something exciting was happening out here when I'd been asked to sit in with a group that was discussing the feasibility of the three church youth departments taking on this project in some joint way. So I began to get excited about it before I had any invitation to come out. Then it was about that time that in 1963 that Carol Hinderly came as the director, and Carol and I and Mary and Gertrude, four of us had been very dear friends for a long, long time. Carol and Mary and I started St. Olaf College together back in 1932, I suppose it was, 31 or something like that. So Carol knew that I liked the woods and liked the water and liked the sort of thing, so he invited me out that first summer. And Gertrude and I, together with our son David, had a delightful, delightful time and became hooked on the village. And that hasn't subsided over the years. We still are. The summer of 1963 was, for me, a very interesting one. Let me just lightly touch on that before coming to the period that probably is more important to this discussion. But in 1963, we started off, from my point of view, in a very exciting way. I had met Leo Busted the summer, or the winter before that, when I was down in Richland, for a conference of some sort. And Leo and I became good friends almost instantaneously. And when the week was over, we made a compact with each other that we would meet again, and most likely at this new place called Holden Village, which I hadn't seen yet, and he hadn't heard about at that time. And sure enough, we got together for the opening week of the program in 1963, which in some ways was probably the first formal program. The emphasis before that had been on cleaning up the place and on building the place. And I'm sure it had been covered by others in their reports. Then in 1962, there were a lot of Bible studies and things for the groups, but there still the emphasis probably was pretty much on the work crews. In 1963, the opening programs were for the faculty, Rudy Edmonds, who has been with the village continuously since its birth, and Leo Busted, and myself, together with Dick Lukey, who at that time was a chaplain at a campus chaplain at Princeton University, and particularly working with the people in that Einstein School of Studies. Very able Missouri Synod pastor who has had a very fine and exciting impact on the life of our church in this country. Everybody that I'm recovering from an acute attack of senility, and my closest friends dare tell me that they don't think I'm recovering. But at any rate, we had a very interesting discussion that lasted for several weeks under the general title of The Language of Faith in an Age of Science. And of course, we're so very fortunate to have Rudy and Leo, both of whom can handle the theology as well as the science in their superb training and competence. All right, now, getting on to the year that I spent at the village as an interim director. I first found out that there was some change, that there was going to be a change in directors in a telephone call from Carol, who told me that the time had come when he was going to be leaving the village. And, well, he wasn't all that happy about it. he was facing the reality of leaving. Almost immediately afterwards, I received a call from Laverne Rieke, who was at that time the chairman of the board of directors. And then subsequently, a visit from Dr. Rieke, who came to Chicago, and we sat down and talked a little bit about the possibility of my coming for a limited time to serve as the interim director. The agreement was simply based on the need to give the village a year to settle down in this disturbance of having to change directors, and also a time in which the board could locate John Schramm. Unfortunately, they located him. So, in a sense, my role was simply to stand by and try to keep the place on somewhat an even keel during that year. That turned out to be not necessary. But if I served in a useful purpose, it was to fill the time until John Schramm could arrive in May of 1978. I retired from my work at Lutheran General Hospital in Chicago 1 year early in order to come to the village for that last year of my so-called gainful employment. I came to the village in March for a week or so. My first time in was with Dr. Rieke, and then had to run back to Chicago a few times to start winding up the affairs there as far as the house was concerned. Gertrude and David stayed in Chicago, and Gertrude had the responsibility of arranging for the sale of the house, and I simply came back to collect the money. And Gertrude and David came out in June, and we then stayed for that year. April and May were perhaps not the most pleasant years of my life. The village was a somewhat disturbed place. It was certainly a place in which many people felt an acute grief, a grief of separation from a beloved director and his wife, Mary, who had together as sort of co-directors in the village, meant so much in the shaping of that magnificent community. There were a large number of people in the staff, and I'm talking April and May of that 1977, who were, of course, very close to them and felt a very poignant and acute grief over the separation. As is customary, and I speak rather frankly, as is customary when we are hurt or we feel acute grief, anger is lurking just below the surface, and sometimes it breaks through. So there were a few people who were understandably angry and wondering why they had to be shortchanged in such a way as to have to leave or to get along without a very much loved and respected director. That anger was accompanied by a good deal of confusion and some anxiety, confusion over how can this be, and anxiety over what's going to happen to this village which holds so close to our hearts. But it's interesting, of course, that the village had a life of its own. It a vitality that was born out of 16 years of gospel-centered, creative, celebrating, worshiping fellowship. And in spite of the understandable feelings of grief, and as I say, occasionally some anger. The village carried on. It had its life. It had its movement. It had its goals. It had its expression. It had its gospel. Now, it gives a remarkable testimony, I think, to the soundness, as well as to the excitement of those first years of the village's existence, that it took its first change of directors pretty much in stride. I think that not too many institutions and organizations or fellowships could have ridden through this as well as did Holden Village. And I must say that a good deal of the credit to this goes to Carol and Mary Hinderly on the one side and to the board of directors on the other. Now, sometimes a few of the people thought that it would be hard to put those two together under one category of people who ought to be thanked. But the board acted responsibly in thinking that time had come for a change in directors. Carol and Mary had built a village that is one of the wonders of our life in these days as far as the church is concerned. If you start trying to measure what has streamed out of that village to enrich the lives of the church and of society in general over these years, it is necessary to turn back and to give an expression of thanksgiving to Carol and Mary and to God for those years in which Holden Village was shaped and brought into being and given its life. If underneath there was some pain and some anger and some anxiety, they are experiences in human existence that come along to all of us and in all organizations, but they are capable of being healed, and Holden had a built-in healing element, a self-healing within its structure, within its life, within its spirit, and within the gospel that was right in the middle of it. It is hard to describe and characterize, say, the first 8 months of the time that Gertrude and I were there. It had its highs and lows. There were times that I was seen as some sort of an interloper who had no right being there, that I'd taken something away from Carol and Mary, and it was necessary for sometimes to remind people that I had known and loved Carol and Mary longer than anybody in the village, and that hadn't changed one single bit, but that I also felt that the board had acted responsibly in an uncomfortable situation where they felt that probably it was time for a change in leadership. Much was made during that year in the conversations, not least in the midnight bull sessions, about whether or not the board was acting responsibly. I regretted that tack was taken, but it was also something that was easily understood. When people are hurt, it's necessary to try to find somebody to kind of hang it on. And occasionally it even got hung on me, and I, in some ways, was an innocent bystander. But there were highs during that time, as well as the lows. A few more things on the lows. There was, of course, this wounded fellowship. that was beginning to find its way out of the depths of its grief and to work its way through. There were the resentments, but these deep hurts have to find some way of expression. They do in any situation and circumstance in life in which they come out, they have to find some kind of an expression. And if they did, that was simply good. The worst thing that you can do with feelings like that is to pretend they're not there, of course. The village had become, and one of the problems, I think, that made it possible for the village to go through a rather sharp disruption for a short period of time, was that the village had become something like an inverted triangle standing on its sharp point. Like most new enterprises, they rest very much on a primary shaper, in this case, Carol Hinderly, who was, more than anybody else up to this time, surely, the shaper of Holden Village. It took on so much of his nature, so much of his personality, so much of his character, and that of his very charming and lovely wife, Mary, who is one of our very, very dear friends, of course. Now, if that has rested so very much upon the original shaper of the village, as happens, as I'm suggesting, in most new enterprises, then it's not to be wondered at that there's a period of intense anxiety when that point itself is removed. So when Carol left the village, the base upon which the village had in large measure, and I don't want to overdo this analogy, but in large measure it did rest upon the character and the nature and the personality of Carol and Mary. And when they left, there was understandable apprehension and anxiety. It was, in the view of many, a very frightening experience, and that the village was threatened because that point upon which it rested had been removed. There was a time, of course, and as time went on, that there was a transition that took place. Perhaps we could say turning that triangle over so that it rested on its broader base. And by that, I mean the board became more active in determining the nature and the character of the village itself. There were more people who were flowing through, had been flowing through, and they became even more concerned, more active, took more sense of responsibility for the village. There was additional leadership that was coming into the village and has since Carol left, and certainly with the Schramms coming, and now with Elmer Witt. So that the base upon which Holden Village rests and functions is broadening a good deal. There were other things, of course, other than the transition of leadership. I remember sitting one night in the rooms of one of the staff members, having had a delightful dinner together with three or four of the village people. Gertrude and I were enjoying it thoroughly when we heard a shout and a siren, and stepped outside and saw a big glow in the sky up where the garage was now burning furiously. It was a terrible moment, standing there with the fire being reflected off the mountains and the snow all about. We could hear the crackling. There was running and some orderly kind of excitement and confusion as the firefighters went to try to see if there was anything they could do. The fire was way ahead of them. It had taken its hold immediately and put the whole place into a blaze, and it would have been extremely dangerous to try to do anything to put it out. So we could all only stand there helplessly and see it happen. And the morning dawned, and we saw only the dirty snow and the embers and some smoke coming out of what little fire remained. But it was interesting also that out of these ashes, like Phoenix, something good and even better should arrive. I remember that we sent out letters telling people that the garage had burned and a lot of equipment and tools had burned, and that we certainly had to rebuild it. And we asked the people who are Holden Village for help, and the response was just fantastic. The money came in, all that was needed, and in a very short time, a group came over from Ocean Shores to help the staff people that were there on the scene build a new and a far better garage. And it was one of those things that happens at Holden when there is a need or there's a trouble. There is a closeness that develops in a cooperation and a deepening of the expression of the fellowship, which has enriched the lives of all of us. enrich the lives of all of us. Another of the lows for me during those first 8 months was when I was informed, exactly to my surprise, but certainly I had no knowledge of the fact that there was some use of marijuana in the village, and I felt that it was wise to call a meeting of the total village, that is of those who were there on this last part of January, last week in January in 1978. And I reminded them that there was a strict rule and that they had all signed agreements before they came into the village that there would be no use of drugs while they were in the village, and that this was not something that could be debated. And while I heartily agreed with the rule itself, it wasn't even something over which I had any control. But I was simply asked that the contract which they had with the village upon entering, that they would not use drugs, and if so, it was a cause for immediate dismissal, that this was had to be carried out. So I simply ask that anybody who was using marijuana to leave the village. And I maybe violated even the rule of the village by not making it a permanent thing. But for the 1 month during which the village could itself examine itself, and the people who were involved in the use of marijuana could examine themselves, they were asked to remain out of the village, and then they were told that upon the expiration of that period, they would be welcomed back in love into the village. Nearly all of them came back, and some good discussions were held by the whole community. There were differences of opinion about whether or not marijuana was useful or good, as some held, or not very harmful, as some others held, or downright threatening to the fellowship and to the community, as others held. I think the community did a good job in thinking through these various positions. There was, of course, the laws of the state of Washington, which made it a criminal thing. I think there was a rather broad acceptance of the legitimacy of the village's rule against marijuana. If I think now over these years that have passed since that time, most of a decade, it seems that the situation has, in the use of marijuana in this country, as of course other drugs that are more dangerous, has gone just into a situation of insanity. We keep hearing that the biggest cash crop in Oregon and the biggest cash crop in California is marijuana. Number of raids and arrests in Washington alone have been frighteningly high. But the highs that were there were glorious, wondrous, wondrous things. Just things that come flashing through my mind as I sit here now. I'm trying to keep my two dogs out of my lap. You two guys leave. Go on. Scram. Peter. Go on. Go. Go to bed. The Christmas Eve, when everybody that could find icicles had managed to build these icicle temples with candles underneath, lighting the pathways leading down to the place of worship, and then to see the people coming singing. It was one of those moments of wonder that seemed to be closer to the spirit and to the mood of the Christmas story than anything I had ever experienced in life before. The Christmas Eve service, when at the close and after the benediction, the whole crowd stood up and sang the Hallelujah chorus while a thousand balloons were freed from the balcony of Koinonia. There's another of those things that symbolizes the nature of and the character of Holden's interpretation of the gospel. This sometimes even ridiculous celebration that comes to contribute to moments of the deepest holiness. I don't know where else you can find which is ridiculous contributing to the holy. Another little memory that comes one night. Nancy Winder, who was the pastor of the church, of the congregation, had asked me to give the proclamation, and she was to take the liturgy and the service and the distribution of the Eucharist. I suspect that it was Paul Hinderly who deliberately made the loaf of bread which was to be used at that communion a little bit harder than what her fingers could easily break. And so she clawed away at this loaf of bread during the words of institution, trying to open it up, until most of us in the whole room started to chuckle a little bit at the dilemma. So she handed it over to me, suggesting that if I was smart enough to laugh at this predicament, maybe I was also smart enough to do something about it. And I tried to break it in somewhat dignified manner and couldn't. And finally ended up taking it and banging it over my knee, and it broke open, and then we could get at the softer insides of the bread. Well, I think in any other setting this would have been terribly disruptive. Here there was a chuckle and then a loud laughing that took place right in the middle of the most solemn time during these words of institution when our Lord was giving us his body. It had a little follow-up a few minutes later when the distribution itself had actually started and somebody started singing, "Let us break bread together on our knees." And of course then, nothing but hilarious laughter. Again I say that this couldn't take place any place that I know of in this world, except at Holden, where there is such a deep tradition of bringing together that which may be ridiculous, hilarious, and having it contribute to our experience of the holy. Well, I finally managed to get Gertrude over here to join me in this as we bring this probably too long tape to a conclusion. We have found in our conversations and in our life after leaving the village 6-7 years ago that the little incidents and the little bits of humor and those deep moments of significance and meaning and inspiration keep creeping into our conversations around the dinner table or in the family room or when friends are over here. One of the things that I think most of us had a lot of fun with was something that Gertrude started up in the village of the year that she was there. She found an old dead tree someplace and put it out in our front yard. Well, why don't you talk about it now that you're here? You tell us a little bit about the lollipop tree.
Well, it was just an old dead tree. It wasn't very large. And we put it in the front lawn. And then occasionally I would put a lollipop or stick of gum or maybe a little note to them, knowing that it would be on a Friday night when we would have it was a different type of dinner. And I knew some of the kids didn't like what they were going to have, so I'd leave a little note on the tree inviting each one into the chalet where we would have a wiener roast. And they just loved that. Little Jeff and Sean were the highlights of every party. And
now they were about 5 years old, weren't they? Something like that? I remember the time when they came in during one of those wiener roast things and decided they'd rather have candy out of the candy jar than the wieners that you had. And when I stopped them from taking the candy, Jeff looked up to me and said, "I am the boss of me." And then Sean right away said, "And God gave us all the candy in the whole world." The fun of seeing all these kids come up to look for their little package on the dead tree out in the yard was awful. It was always a lot of fun. And what were some of the other things that you remember out of this year?
Well, if we're talking about the children, I remember when Sean and Jeff came in and you were pretending that you were sleeping. And you were not, and they came in and went to the candy jar and hid some candy and tiptoed out the front door.
And of course there were all those times when in the evening we had open houses and found that informal expression of fellowship and relationship, which is so significant for a part of the community life at Holden. Well, I suppose we ought to start bringing this thing to a close, but anything else you want to say?
Well, the year we spent at Holden was one of the great years of my life. The experience of community, the fellowship with all friends, old friends made over the years at Holden, and the excitement of seeing strangers become friends, and significant people in our lives. All of these things together made for a year over which we'll always be very, very grateful.
I think that maybe a closing word of expression of thanks to all of you who have made these memories possible for us. The board and the staff and the guests, everybody who has contributed so richly to the reality that is Holden Village. We will always be grateful. The more relaxed years of our lives now since retirement give us an opportunity to reflect, and in that reflection we find great excitement, great enrichment of the days of our remaining years. So thank you, all of you, for contributing to so richly and so significantly to our lives.